julas tilbud hos Spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt I tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
Some of the newest research just coming out, hasn't been published yet, but will be very shortly, is showing one of the most important aspects to improving our longevity. So we tested 55 different modalities, and one of them showed up to be literally the most important device that we could use for longevity.
Hei dere, velkommen til oss. Vi Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Vi to jenter bak rattet. Dette Monica.
Og dette Alette. Vi biohacking-kollegaer og legger sammen våre erfaringer og kunnskap for å inspirere deg til å ta fatt på biohacking for å optimalisere helsen din.
Vi følger med og setter forstørrelsesglass på trender og siste forskning og snakker med verdens toppeksperter innen trening, life coaching, helse og biohacking.
Du klar for å starte med konkrete hacks, lytte til din egen kropp og ta fatt på din helsemessige reise sammen med oss.
Vi ønsker naturlig tilnærming til helsen vår, og vi snakker til både menn og kvinner.
Du kan gjerne gi tilbakemeldinger til oss under podcasten her, og slå gjerne til med en god stjerne.
Du finner oss også på Instagram og Facebook. Du klar? Velkommen! Hyperbar medisin har blitt mye mer kjent her hjemme I Norge, og vi har I dag med oss en fantastisk person, en av de fremste, om ikke den fremste I verden, Dr. Jason Saunders, som mange av dere kjenner, for han har vært på podcasten vår ved flere anledninger, og han har også vært I Norge og forelest på Biohacking Weekend. En fantastisk fyr. Vi blitt glad I hele familien, både han og Melissa Kona, begge leger med hovedfag I kiropraktikk. Jason selv, han har 20 års erfaring med HBOT, altså hyperbar oksygenterapi, og han hjelper klinikker over hele verden å komme I gang. Og han lærer bort forskjellige helseprotokoller man bruker til diverse sykdommer. Og han har jo skrevet en bok som heter Oxygen Under Pressure før, og der lister han opp, jeg tror det nærmere 100 diagnoser, som, eller sykdomstilstander, hvor man da har forskning bak at hyperbar terapi kan hjelpe. Men han underviser da I hyperbar medisin og utdanner coacher og fagfolk I hele verden, og nå han aktuell med 2 nye bøker.
Det han, og disse da for practitioners, altså de som praktiserer denne hyperbar medisin, og altså for oss vanlige også, men hvis du ikke så kjent med hyperbar, så jo Oxygen Under Pressure den første boken. Den sånn veldig fin å få oversikten på. Men nå har det altså da en sånn ordentlig guide. Han sa han har brukt sine 17 år hvor han har holdt på med dette til å lave den boken.
Ja, og bare for å gi dere et lite bilde av hva dette da, oksygenterapi en medisinsk behandling som man, der man bruker ekstra oksygen som man tilfører kroppen for å hjelpe forskjellige problemtilstander hos folk. Og det kan gis på mange forskjellige måter. Det mykt kammer, og det hardt kammer, som man kaller det, og det forskjellige protokoller og forskjellige innstillinger og metning I forhold til oksygenet og hvordan man bruker dette.
Ja, og jeg veldig glad for at han nå skal ut og lære opp andre, fordi det har begynt å rumle fælt I Norge nå med HBOT. Det mange som starter med det. Det var ikke mange når vi begynte for en stund siden, men nå det mange, og det viktig at folk vet hva det går til, at dette ikke blir noe sånn hype og en sånn tulleting, for dette seriøst. Og Jason forteller jo mye om den nyeste studien sin, hvor de virkelig har gått I dybden, og her bruker de friske mennesker, og dette med å optimalisere, og hva han ser, og ja, bare hør I episoden, han kommer med små gullkorn om denne terapien gjennom hele episoden.
Ja, viktig at personalet som gir disse behandlingene sertifiserte. Mange har kun et online-kurs, og det kan sikkert være greit det også, men vi føler jo at med den kunnskapen Dr. Jason Saunders har, og måten han trekker folk inn i praksisen når han underviser og lærer dem opp, for dette er jo en praktisk veiledning når du ligger inne i et kammer i mellom 60-120 minutter. Du er jo til stede med disse pasientene dine som ligger inne i hyperbar, så det å ha praksis rundt en sånn type veiledning er kjempeviktig. Og han, som du sa, Aletta, har jo gitt ut disse to bøkene nå, akkurat denne uken, og så kommer han til London 13-16 november og skal undervise. Så vi håper at mange av dere norske fagfolk som jobber med hyperbar drar over og deltar på kurset til Dr. Jason, og at dere blir like glad i han som det vi har blitt. Han er virkelig så kunnskapsrik, og han ser ikke bare på behandlingen, han ser på de grunnleggende årsakene, for han jobber funksjonelt med medisin, studerer biokemi og ser på alle de bakenforliggende grunnene til at man har blitt syk. Og oksygenterapi er jo en av de måtene å gjøre dette på. Han snakker om at det kun 25% av bedringen du oppnår mens du ligger i selve kammeret, men at de 75% av fordelen de kommer når du kommer ut etter du har vært inne i kammeret, som man kaller for en sånn deloading-fase.
Ja, det var faktisk nytt for meg. Jeg visste ikke det. Jeg trodde jo det var det som skjedde der inne, og så var du ferdig. Så det var veldig oppklarende, og dette kan ta tid. Det var liksom, han sa det 100-dollars spørsmålet, er hvor lang tid vi da bruker på den deload-fasen. Det var veldig interessant. Så da kommer det jo litt an på hvor ofte man gjør det, hvor mye tryck man har i kammeret och de tingene där hur lång tid det tar efterpå.
Så episoden idag handlar om hyperbar och han snackar om många gode ting, men vi är också inne på flera teman, så pröva håll ut helt till slut och få med alla de gode detaljerna som ska komma lite in på også. Men han snackar om kamerorna, är de säkra? De som jobbar med kamerorna, är de tränade? Är maskinerna effektiva? Og det er akkurat disse tingene han stiller spørsmål om, og det er derfor han ønsker å lære folk sånn at treningen gjøres tryggest mulig, sånn at du får igjen for det du investerer både av tid og penger når du skal gå inn i et kammer. Og en annen ting som var litt spennende, at de har jo begynt å måle mange av tilstandene før og etter for å se at det faktisk virker. Og han snakket om at det nytter ikke bare måle blodet, men du må også intracellulært forstå at det du måler har gått inn i cellene. For det er en stor forskjell å bare ta en blodprøve og faktisk se at det du bruker tid og energi på går inn i cellene. Så dette er bra. Men da han var i Norge, så hadde han blant annet et foredrag hvor han introduserte red light, methylene blue og O2. Han kalte det for rød, blå og luft. Så det var spennende. Det snakket vi også litt om i dag.
Ja, vi fikk spurt han litt om det da. Og først så snakket vi om metylen blå, som et syntetisk kjemisk farvestoff med mange bruksområder innen medisin, biologi og kjemi. Og det har vært brukt som et legemiddel og som et farvestoff for laboratorieanalyser. Og i da medisinske sammenhenger så brukes metylen blå blant annet til å behandle tilstander som hemoglobin i blodet, at vi skal binde oksygenet effektivt. Det hjelper oss med mitokondriehelsen vår, og vi får en sånn lite pepp av det. Det hjelper oss å... Og så er det særlig også for forgiftninger, er det veldig bra å bruke metylen blå. Og ja, vi har testet det litt selv også.
En annen ting han introduserte var jo dette ordet kromofom, som da handler om fargene i cellene og hvordan de påvirker, for eksempel at rødt lys det aktiverer det blå, og også at det blå finnes i mange grønnsaker. Så når han snakker om fargen i denne sammenhengen, så ser han også på rødfargen da, som så i red light therapy, men utgangspunktet er jo solen som gir oss næring, og det mest naturlige er jo å være ute. Men rød lysterapi, som vi vet, er jo også kjent som det vi kaller for fotobiomodulering, eller en slags lysterapi som har en bølgelengde mellom, ja, mellom 600 000 nanometer. Og denne trenger jo dypt inn i huden og kan påvirke cellene og mitokondriene. Men det er ikke alle som har tilgang på det, så da kan jo det naturlige sollyset, og man kan gå litt sånn så forfedrene våre gjorde. Vi var ute i naturen og fikk sollyset, og vi fant bær ute på markene. Og han nevner jo også at det kanskje trykket var litt høyere i luften for veldig lang tid tilbake, så kanskje det var den naturlige biohacking vi hadde da, Alette.
Ja, det kan nok ha vært det. Nei, så dere, gled dere til en herlig episode med Jason Sonners. Velkommen til Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Julehuset Scheidar feirer 60 år og deler ut gavene tidlig I år. Nå setter vi nemlig ned prisen ytterligere med 50% på alle julevarer. Juletrepynt, juletekstiler, julebelysning. Alt som skal til for å skape en magisk julestemning hjemme. Sving innom julehuset Scheidar. Alt du ønsker deg til julehjemmet.
Julas tilbud og spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Altid tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
Dr. Jason Sonners, it's really so nice to see you again. We love you and your family, and we feel you're a part of the team here in Norway, the community. So welcome back to our podcast.
Thank you so much. I love being here, and I love sharing these ideas with you and your audience. And thank you. We also feel a part of your family, so thanks so much.
And congratulations. You just came back from an international congress. You released 2 books. You have been so busy the last year. Tell us about it.
So it's been a year. So thank you. We've been teaching these hyperbaric courses now for quite a few years. And one of the clear issues I would say in the industry, there hasn't been a concise book. I mean, you know that I have that other, you know, Oxygen Under Pressure, but there has not been a concise book that really, what I would say is even readable, let alone just really describes the mechanisms of action, the protocols for, you know, off-label use. So one of the other docs that I teach with, Dr. Joe Dottori, and I basically just finished that textbook. So it mimics our course, but it's also just what I would consider to be almost like the desk reference of hyperbaric oxygen. And so that was literally just released days ago. At that Congress. And then at the same time, I was writing a book on business. So, you know, one of the things I find, especially in areas like functional medicine or hyperbaric in specific, you know, we really care and we really want these improvements in our patients. And most people who get into hyperbaric, it's because they've had a very specific, you know, experience with the modality, and now they want to give it back to the world. And so these people, you know, have huge hearts and they're trying to do their best to really help families, but that doesn't always mean that they understand or know business. And the problem with that in my mind is that, you know, you could be the most loving and caring provider, but if you don't have a strong business, you really just don't have the tools it needs to continue to help your community. And so, you know, I wrote this book as an attempt to try to help people who I know, you know, love their patients, love their community, want to give back, but need help, you know, on the business side so that they can make sure that they're also solid and can take that into the future. So the hyperbaric book is The Art and Science of Hyperbaric Medicine. And the business book is called The Fulfilled Physician. It's not only for doctors, but it's really for anyone who's running a clinic or a practice that really needs to hone their business skills. Yeah. I could send you guys, if you want to, I can send you, you know, links to those as well.
Perfect. Yes, that's wonderful. And the book, The Act and Science, it's also for users, like everybody who goes into the chamber could read this and learn more from the
practice. Yeah, I mean, you know, Oxygen, you've seen that, Oxygen Under Pressure, which is my first book on hyperbaric. Yes. That's literally for anybody, understandable. It's, you know, I think it's a great introduction to hyperbaric. The other book, this new one, is a little bit more, I'd say, heavier in science, but it's still, I believe, written in a way that virtually anyone could understand it. Here, I have a, just so you can see.
It's beautiful. Ooh, I love the cover. We saw it when it was released on Friday. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, there's a lot in there. It's, you know, it's chock full of, it's like 17 years of our experience built into a single book. So,
wow. So did you work with this book for 17 years?
I mean, in my mind, I have. Yeah. And, you know, we've written so much. Joe and I have written so much on the topic. Perfect. So we really just condensed all of that information into, you know, into a structure that could be used for anybody.
Okay. So before we dig more into the conversation here, would you just again remind us what hyperbaric medicine is and if there's any new theories around it the last year.
Sure. So, you know, hyperbaric literally by definition means hyper increased baric pressure. So technically, this is just a tool that you're going to go inside. The chamber itself is going to pressurize. And what that's going to do is it's going to create a temporary increase in what your body would experience as increased atmospheric pressure, right? So even right now, as you and I are having this conversation, you know, there's an atmosphere around us. That atmosphere has a pressure, and that pressure is what allows us when we breathe to pull oxygen out of the air that we're breathing and ultimately dissolve it into our body, carried by red blood cells. And then that's how we get oxygen to all of our working cells and tissues. So as opposed to the atmospheric pressure, when you go inside of a chamber, it's just creating a temporary increase in that pressure more than what our typical atmosphere is creating. And so some people use air only, the same gases that you and I are breathing right now. And some people use increased levels of oxygen. So you can drive higher percentages of oxygen. So the air you and I are breathing is 21% oxygen. We could do 50, 80, 90, 100% oxygen inside the chamber as well. And that's only going to make, you know, an even higher exponential effect when you add those increased levels of oxygen. Sometimes that's really important, depending on what the goal or the outcome we're trying to achieve. And many times air only could be very effective. And so, you know, that's the basis for really what's happening in the chamber. I would also say that, you know, a newer concept that's really been looked much further in the research recently is that there's the time you spend in the chamber. So you go in this chamber, it pressurizes, whether you're using oxygen or not, no matter what, you're still increasing the quantity of oxygen that the body is able to absorb. And we call that like the loading phase, like you're loading with oxygen while you're in the chamber. When you depressurize the chamber, there's no more excess environmental pressure keeping all of that oxygen in your body. And so as you depressurize the chamber and get out, now that oxygen is trying to get out of your body. It's kind of like if you had a bottle of seltzer and you open the bottle, right? When the cap was on, you don't even know that there's really bubbles inside, right? When you take the cap off, all of a sudden you see these bubbles because that pressure is being released. That same concept is happening in our body with regard to oxygen. And as those bubbles are coming out, they're oxygen bubbles in this case. They're not dangerous like scuba diving injuries, but not only are they not dangerous, they're very helpful. So as it's trying to get out of your body, it's actually interacting with all of your cells and tissues, nourishing your cells and tissues and really providing the oxygen that they need to function and heal and regenerate tissue, et cetera. So, you know, we used to only talk about hyperbaric with like in that loading phase, how much oxygen did this person get? I would now tend to say that, you know, only 25% of the benefit is probably the time you're in the chamber. And 75% or more is actually getting out of the chamber and allowing that gas to try to escape. And really, that's when, you know, we're driving a tremendous amount of the benefits. You know, there's so many benefits of hyperbaric, but if you look at most of them with regard to growth factor release, stem cell mobilization, new blood vessel growth, mitochondrial benefits, immune system benefits, so many of those specific benefits are happening in the deloading phase, like as you're getting out of the chamber. So it's almost like we go in there only so we can load up on oxygen so that we can get out and get most of those benefits.
So how long is this deloading phase after we get out of the chamber?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, in this moment, that's still, I would say, like one of the million-dollar questions that hasn't been. So what we know is, because it varies, right? So how long were you in there? What percentage of oxygen were you breathing? Right. That's going to be the two factors. And then time, how long are you in there? Those are the three factors that are really going to say how much loading did we get? Right. So the amount of loading will also affect how quickly or how long it takes, you know, to get that oxygen to deload. But and then different tissue types. In other words, adipose tissue like fat cells, they have a very slow metabolism. So, you know, they're going to metabolize that oxygen very slowly versus, you know, a liver cell or a brain cell, which uses a tremendous amount of oxygen, it's going to utilize that very quickly. So, you know, it's the three factors, pressure, percentage of oxygen, and time, that are going to be the loading component, that how much did I get? And then we'd have to measure all these different cell types to see how quickly it deloads. But I would say the general consensus is, you know, ultimately somewhere, it's a pretty big range, but somewhere between 4 and 12 hours, you would be sort of back to baseline, if you will.
But since the first time we met you and had you on the podcast, we've been seeing you here in Norway when you came to speak, and we've met you at other conferences, but it seems like it's a growing community. More people are using hyperbaric medicine. How should we navigate, and which centers would be secure and safe to go to? Is there something we should think about?
So it's, you know, that's another hard one in this moment. There's still this industry before it got so, and this, I think this happens in a lot of fields, but, you know, at a time where this industry had less awareness of all the different benefits and less access to as many chambers that are out there now in the market. And, you know, there were very few chambers. They were primarily only in hospitals. There's a very specific training program that these people would go through, but they really won't allow people to use the chambers like you, you know, you and I, to, let's say, optimize biology as an example. Like, that's not even on their radar. It's not even an option. You couldn't even pay them typically to go in there. Now that this other side of the field has really been growing, which is, you know, obviously, you know, that I've spent a lot of my life trying to get this industry to grow. Now there's these new issues that have come up, like, you know, are these chambers safe? And do these practitioners, you know, are they trained? And do they know how to deliver this thing, number one, safely, and number two, effectively, from a protocol standpoint? And that's why, as you know, I mean, that's why I'm spending so much time trying to you know, teach and train and do these certification courses, because, you know, I want this industry to grow, but I want it to grow in a way that I also can believe that it's safe and effective. And, you know, God forbid anything happen in chamber, it's like, you know, that's gonna have a major impact, not only on the people where that happened, but it would have an impact on worldwide, on the industry as a whole. And so, you know, I do take this very seriously. So, you know, I mean, that's, you know, as an example, I used to only teach these courses, you know, in the US, but it's growing, you know, and that's, I'd say that's where it's grown the most over the last few years. But, you know, now it's catching up abroad. And so, you know, we taught a course in Australia, we taught one in Spain, you know, we're coming next month, we're coming to England. I would love to do one day in Norway. At this conference last weekend, you know, we had a few people from Switzerland. They were interested in a course. We had a few people from Mexico. They were interested in a course. I keep getting emails from South Africa. Like, I know, I mean, I can't do all of it. I wish that I could. But I do think it's important to know, you know, there's like certifications on the equipment, and every country has their own distinction of what is required. So, like, in Europe, you know, these devices should have a CE, right? If these devices have a CE, which is kind of like, it for us, it's like the FDA approval, you know, but it's like a minimum, it's basically a minimum manufacturing, you know, a level of production. So you could say, well, listen, here's the standard for like how these things need to be built. And if it has that, you could say, well, we've met the standard that this, you know, that this country or this area deems appropriate. Okay. So from an equipment standpoint, that should be part of the case. And then from a training standpoint, you know, they should have some kind of training. And sometimes that could be done online. I think the best trainings are certainly in person. We offer online trainings, we offer in-person trainings, you know, but I tell people the value that someone gets from the in-person training isn't even close to, you know, what somebody really pulls from the online training. But, you know, they should be certified, and their equipment should be certified. And if we have those two things locked down, then, you know, I feel like we can trust them. We have in the US, we have a network of like trusted providers, you know, people that we know were certified, people who we know their equipment meets the need for the US, you know, and we're sort of mapping and linking everybody together. And we've now started to do that internationally as well. So we're starting to connect with practices outside the US, and we're going to build sort of that international network so that people have an idea of like, okay, I know that this equipment meets that need, and I know that they've been trained a certain way, and you know, we could feel safe going to this place.
Vi opptatt av å yte, prestere optimalt og samtidig støtte opp om god helse. Dette biohacking.
Ja, og vi vil fremheve et supplement vi veldig glad I og som vi bruker hver eneste dag. Det salte elektrolyttene fra Superstate. Disse egenproduserte med gode ingredienser, og her det ikke tatt noen shortcuts.
Men hvorfor tar vi egentlig elektrolytter? Jo, hvis du spiser et råvarebasert kosthold, da trenger du mer salt enn hvis du spiser veldig mye ferdigprodusert mat, for den inneholder mye salt.
Og drikker du mye vann, så skiller du ut elektrolyttene og blir faktisk dehydrert I stedet for hydrert.
Og følger du et lavkarbo eller et keto-kosthold, skiller nyrene ut mer natrium, og det gjerne grunnen til at vi får ketoflu. Da hjelper det å fylle på med saltet.
Saltelektrolytter fyller på med de viktige mineralene natrium, kalium og magnesium. De sørger for riktig væskebalanse og raskere restitusjon. Selvsagt disse uten sukker og andre lumske ingredienser, og de kan også brukes ved faste.
Og vi har våre favoritter. Jeg veldig glad I sitronsmaken. Da blander jeg den I vann med isbiter. Da føler jeg at jeg har en skikkelig treat foran meg.
Og jeg digger den med appelsinsmak og lager gjerne ispinner I fryseren. Det kjempegodt, og de enkle å ta med seg I vesken, for det porsjonsstørrelse som nok til en halv liter.
Vil du teste, har vi et tilbud til deg. Gå inn på stupestate.no, finn din favorittsmak og bruk rabattkoden BG20 til 8. november.
Back to the chambers, because this is popping up in Norway now as well. And what's the difference between a soft chamber and a hard chamber? What should we look for?
Yeah, so I mean, same thing. I mean, these the devices could have this, let's say in, you guys would have, I think, CE also. That should fall under like Norway and Sweden, just like it does in London. So the equipment itself, regardless whether it's soft or hard, the CE is something that should have, you know, that this equipment should have. You know, there's a lot of politics in this industry. You know, it's been around for a long time, and it started in one very specific way with, you know, higher pressure only, you know, 100% oxygen only, you know, hospital setting only. And so, you know, there's a lot of regulations that have been developed over the last 70 or 80 years in traditional hyperbarics. And, you know, now that there's this sort of non-traditional hyperbaric world, there's infighting, you know, and political drama going on in the industry because of that. Now, you know, I hear things all the time, like people with soft chambers saying, well, everything, I could do everything that a hard chamber can do. And, you know, that's honestly not accurate. And at the same time, you have clinics that only do hard chamber, like higher pressure, saying things like these soft chambers, they have no research and they're dangerous and they don't do anything. And quite honestly, that's not true either. And so, you know, I set out a few years ago because I kept getting these questions over and over again. And, you know, I knew from experience, you know, I have worked with soft chambers for a long time. I've worked with hard chambers for a long time. I've been doing this for almost 18 years now. And so, you know, In my heart, as a clinician, I've seen the effects of both. So I know that to say one doesn't do anything couldn't possibly be true. But I've also seen, you know, let's say higher pressure do things that I felt like I didn't know that lower pressure was capable of. At the same time, I felt like I thought I saw some things that lower pressure did that high pressure couldn't do either. And so, you know, I've been wrestling with that myself. So anyway, you know, about 3 years ago, I set out for like that PhD program that I'm now finishing up. So I'll graduate in the next few months. But the research that we did in the office was that it was to compare lower pressure soft chamber, which is typically in ATA or atmospheres absolute. Soft chamber range is between like 1.3 and 1.5 ATA, which is about like 10 feet of seawater or 15 to 17 feet of seawater. It's like that range of depth, not tremendously deep. And then we compared that to 2.0 ATA, which is about 33 feet of seawater, right? A full, that's like one extra full bar of pressure. And so 1.3 is like 30% of a bar, 1.5 is about 50% of a bar, right? And 2.0 is a full extra bar on top of the atmospheric pressure that we're at. So we wanted to compare that lower pressure, mild, we call it mild pressure, to higher pressure. And we looked at inflammatory cytokines, 71 different cytokine panels, what we did. We looked at cognition and cognitive performance. We looked at DNA and epigenetic panels, looking at, you know, how does this thing affect the epigenome? And I mean, what we found, quite honestly, was incredible. I expected, you know, the hypothesis here was that we would have seen similar effects of lower pressure as we do at higher pressure, but we thought that higher pressure, it would happen at a greater magnitude and it would happen faster. And that at lower pressures, it would just take longer to get to that same place. And there were some areas that certainly followed that. Meanwhile, we also found that high pressure was doing something that mild pressure just couldn't do. We also found that mild pressure was doing something that high pressure couldn't do. And so now this is going to open up like a whole, quite honestly, a whole new can of worms in terms of like, okay, so how then are we going to apply, you know, this tool? And so in this moment, like all research, you know, to some extent, we have more questions than we actually have answers. But I believe it's just not that simple. It's not just like, hey, anybody for anything can go into any chamber at any pressure and expect the same result. Like, that's just not going to be the case. And we may need to start doing better testing to understand, like, okay, we know that this person has this problem. We've run these tests to see which areas we need to really help them the most. And as a result, is that more of a mild pressure or is that more of a high pressure type of issue? Some examples would be things like the brain is one of the most metabolically active tissues. Like it requires an enormous amount of oxygen. So we know that as we increase the oxygen levels in the body, we almost always see improved brain or cognitive performance, and we see improved neuroplasticity, improved ability for the brain to heal. We also know that the brain is the most sensitive. Like high pressures in a brain that might be injured or overly inflamed becomes more dangerous. So you might have somebody, as an example, where they have, you know, a certain disease like Crohn's or colitis, right? And they have so high levels of inflammation, damage to the intestinal wall. Normally, I would want to treat that person at higher pressures. But they also have a history of, let's say, you know, traumatic brain injury and concussion, and they have brain fog and these other issues. Well, my belief would be we have to treat them at those lower pressures and actually start to heal the brain and let the brain become stronger and stronger and more resilient. And then if we need to, we can transition to higher pressures and actually get more concentrated effect, let's say, in the intestinal wall. Now, I also believe the intestinal walls and the inflammation will be helped by the mild pressure. But I think if we skip that and went right to the higher pressures, that we can actually end up creating more problems cognitively by skipping that step, if that makes sense. So, you know, I think this opens up a new way of understanding how to apply this therapy in terms of which effects we're trying to create. We found that, let's say inflammation, we found that, you know, certain cytokines responded to mild pressure. And so you can run now, you know, we can run a cytokine panel. And based on this, we could start to see, well, here's the inflammatory markers that were affected. Therefore, here are the pressures. We, you know, this is more of a high pressure thing, or this is more of a low pressure thing. Or, you know, so in the cytokines, I would say roughly the mild pressure affected about 22 of them. High pressure affected about 27 of them. And there were about 9 that were in common out of those two numbers. Okay. So if it's one of the ones in common, then, you know, potentially any pressure,
might affect that and improve that. But if it was one of the ones that only, you know, mild had a larger effect or high pressure had a higher effect, then we'd have to shift that accordingly, you know. We also found, let's say, in the epigenome, from a inflammatory and immune system standpoint, lower pressure seemed to affect genes that would help us reduce inflammation, neuroinflammation or systemic inflammation. Lower pressure also stimulated a lot of collagen and bone growth. High pressure seemed to stimulate, you know, genes that would affect how we respond to oxidative stress, or genes that would help repair DNA, right? So again, there's this, you know, contrast between the two. Now, I think at the end of the day, if it's possible, as if we got away from disease and we just talked about like biological optimization, you would see. So as an example, the people in my study, they all had to be healthy, right? So I was saying, listen, I believe that healthy, asymptomatic, non-diagnosed people still have room for improvement, right? And I know you would agree, right? Yeah, that's what, yeah. Right? That's really, you know, the whole biohacking movement is about, listen, I have nothing really necessarily to complain about. However, I'd like to be the healthiest version of me. So the population that I took for the study had to fit in that category, because I didn't want to say, well, we reduced inflammation with someone with an autoimmune disease. I know we can do that. Can I actually reduce inflammation in somebody who doesn't think that they're inflamed? Because as you and I know, most of us are not as healthy as we could be. Most of us are probably more inflamed than we should be. And so I wanted to see the effect there. And so it's even more meaningful this way, because this is like, you know, it's a much more sensitive look at how we lower inflammatory levels. So I think if we were looking at optimization, if you were able to do this, you would purposefully do a series of therapy at mild pressure, because that's going to help heal some delicate tissue. That's going to help optimize certain cytokines. That's going to stimulate repair mechanisms at the epigenetic level in a certain direction. And then we would have this ability to go through a mid-range of pressure and then a high range of pressure. And if we went through those different cycles, we're going to find we're affecting every cytokine that there is. We're affecting all the growth factors. We're affecting all these different genes at the epigenetic level that are going to stimulate the growth, the repair, and the regeneration of many different systems simultaneously. So I think that's going to end up being, in my opinion right now, the answer is, you know, going through a series of sessions at a range of different pressures to get the full value of what hyperbaric is really capable of.
Biohacking handler om å optimalisere helsen, og dette gjelder i aller høyeste grad hudhelsen.
Nå på høsten trenger huden litt ekstra. Jeg som fortsatt bor i Norge kjenner at huden min blir tørrere, lettere rød og har fått seg noen pigmentflekker i løpet av sommeren.
Ja, jeg kjenner selv i Spania at huden i endring på høsten, og huden har sin helt egen cirkadianske rytme som følger årstidene.
Vi så glade for å ha det svenske naturlige hudpleieserien Skinome med som samarbeidspartnere på podden igjen. De produserer fersk og forskningsbasert hudpleie, akkurat som en biohacker digger.
Og nå har de kommet med to nye spennende produkter som glimrende for denne årstiden. Fuktkremen Derma Illusion, den roer ned rød, irritert og sensitiv hud, og passer perfekt med det nye serumet Acelic Concentrate, som inneholder 10% acelainsyre, som hjelper med å balansere bakteriene i huden, som kan være årsak til rosacea og hyperpigmentering.
Vi må også fremheve Probiotic Concentrate, som vi har brukt en stund nå. Med sine over 100 millioner levende lactic acid-bakterier gir den huden en deilig og myk overflate og styrker alle de gode hudbakteriene vi har. Dette grunnen til vår gode hudhelse. Denne vi blitt avhengig av.
Ja, og det så herlig at det føles som mat for huden. Gå inn på skinome.com og bruk rabattkoden BIOHACKINGGIRLS20 om du keen på å teste.
Yeah, so it sounds like this is going to be really personalized after a while. And how can we then make meaningful protocols for our health issues? How would we know if I come to you, and where do we start?
Yeah, I mean, even now with like the the preliminary research, even before, let's say that, even before I'm going to release any of this, you know, new information from the research that I did, we have a pretty good idea if you got away from how do I use hyperbaric to treat this condition? And instead we looked at, here's about 12 to 15, sometimes I call them benefits, but they're really like the mechanisms of action. You know, when you put a human into this thing and you pressurize it, there are certain effects that happen almost every session. And then there are certain effects that happen as a result or the accumulative effect of many sessions. And then that list keeps building as we continue to expose somebody to these different treatments. Sometimes it's just about how much oxygen we can get into the person. But many times, as I was saying earlier, it's about this repetition of increasing and decreasing the oxygen, right? Going in and out of the chamber, or if you've heard, doing these air breaks, going on oxygen, coming off oxygen, going on oxygen, coming off oxygen. It creates this cycle of up and down, you know, increased and decreased levels of oxygen. So, you know, one of the things that we did in the Art and Science book that we just put out was, you know, we have a whole chapter on mechanism of action. So these are the different benefits, like what does it take to create higher levels of oxygen in our body? Well, that happens very quickly. It's a short-term benefit. And to some extent, if that's the goal, hyperoxygenation, more is better, right? The more you get, the higher the pressure, the higher the percentage, the more hyperoxygenation you will get, right? So that's one concept versus, let's say, the telomere study that came out. Well, that's going to be less about just a quantity, and it's not going to be a short-term benefit. That's a long-term benefit. And it comes from creating those cycles of ups and downs in their oxygen level. And it's over 2 or 3 months, not over 2 or 3 sessions. So what we did in that chapter was we defined, you know, the most well-researched mechanisms of action. What is this and what does it mean? And what is, you know, what are the benefits of that? And then we described a variety of protocols that would help maximize that mechanism. So if somebody came to me and they said, listen, you know, I'm making up a story, you know, I have a history of, you know, a few surgeries that just, they never healed that well. But besides that, I'm pretty healthy, I'm exercising, but there's a limitation to like what I'm able to do in the gym because, you know, these issues never healed properly. Well, we're like, okay, well, that's a scar tissue issue. Maybe that's a, you know, damage to the blood vessels that just never healed properly. So if I wanted to stimulate, you know, collagen synthesis and fibroblast formation, like if I wanted to stimulate soft tissue repair, or if I wanted to stimulate angiogenesis and new capillary growth so that I can reperfuse this tissue, what would be the mechanism? And then what would be the protocol, right? So that's really what we laid out in that new book, because to me, that's the way we need to start thinking about this. If you add the research that I just finished, I believe now there's actually additional testing we can do, whether that's cytokine testing or cognitive testing or this epigenetic testing to see, okay, well, how healthy is your system, right? Is it what kind of inflammation, which markers are elevated? Okay, here's the pressure we need or the protocol we need. From a cognitive standpoint, is it a memory issue? Is it an attention issue? Is it a you know, neuroplastic or reflexive issue, right? And then once we know what those issues are, okay, what is the right therapy for this person? Or from an epigenetic standpoint, we measure their, you know, like their biological age versus their chronological age. Mm-hmm. And then it looks at different systems, like your immune system, what's its age, right? Your circulatory system, what's its age? Your, you know, so, and then based on that, we would say, well, this is the system that's most affected. Therefore, this is the pressure and this is the protocol that we can. So there's a lot that's going to come in this next year, I think, as this research is released, other people doing similar research will be released. And I think from there, we'll be able to really glean like a very, to your point, you know, individualized and specific approach. So I'm looking forward to that because I think that's really where we need to go.
I think it's great with the testing, but we have been talking with you during the years about different protocols for different things, like if you had COVID, if you had any inflammation, or if you're an elder person, if you're a teenager. So, I mean, you have to apply to each situation, I suppose.
Definitely. And that's one of the things, you know, one of the things that we get, let's say, in the, when we're teaching these things, like in the in-person courses versus the online courses, is, you know, the chance to really discuss, number one, changes in, you know, current events and what's going on in the world. And are we treating those things in real time? And what are we seeing? But also we get to discuss very specific cases, right? So, you know, people come with cases or questions, with whether they're personal or their family, or it's through clients, or I get to share a lot of my experiences with different people, either with different conditions or who are looking to optimize but had different goals. And I get to share the range of therapies that I've done. I get to share the mistakes that I've made. You know, that's like one of the things, I'm about as transparent as it gets when it comes to things like that. You know, I tell people what I've done wrong. I tell people what cases didn't go the way I thought they should. I tell people how we tried to correct those and then what those results were. I think that's the only way we can learn, especially in a field, even though this field's been around a long time, I still feel like it's, we're in the infancy of hyperbarics. And so, you know, any amount of that kind of content that I can share, I always try to do. And that's probably, you know, from the feedback that I get from the classes, I think that's one of the things that people really appreciate the most.
Julehuset Scheidar feirer 60 år og deler ut gavene tidlig i år. Nå setter vi nemlig ned prisen ytterligere med 50% på alle julevarer. Juletrepynt, juletekstiler, julebelysning. Alt som skal til for å skape en magisk julestemning hjemme. Sving innom julehuset Scheidar. Alt du ønsker deg til julehjemmet.
Julas tilbud og spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alltid tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
But Jason, what do we need in order to be healthy? You know, clean air, clean water, clean food. Do we need SUPs? Quality of sleep. What is the definition of healthy?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, when I came and I to your Congress and I spoke, you know, we talked about that whole like plant analogy, right?
Yes.
You know, and without going into all of that, like our understanding, you know, the reason it's so powerful, that analogy, is that if you had a plant in your home and it started to show signs of sickness, we don't first think, oh, it has a genetic disease and now it needs gene therapy. We don't start thinking, oh, it has an infection and it needs an antibiotic, or, oh, it needs surgery. We need to cut all the branches off and, you know, cut, you know, and see if that makes it more healthy, right? We don't have this immediate thought like, oh, clearly drugs and surgery are going to make the plant healthier, right? That's not the direction. Immediately we're like, wait, this thing isn't getting what it needs, right? Everybody goes there. So they're like, what does it need? Well, it needs water. It needs sunlight. It needs food. Maybe there's chemicals in the soil. We need to change the soil. So we go right away for a plant. We go right away into the biology of the plant. And we're like, either it's missing something that it needs, and if it had that, it would be healthy. Or it's getting too much of something that's breaking it down. And so even though that's like a oversimplification, I would say, of health and medicine, I believe that it stands true, and it's true for us as well. And so as soon as a human's not showing, you know, optimum health, which most people are not, like almost 97% of the population, I would say, is not, you know, the first thing that's what we'd be asking, you know, are we, we could break that into deficiency and toxicity, right? So what is this human missing that they need to get into their body to express health? Or toxicity, what are they getting too much of that's, you know, either accelerating their aging or accelerating their inflammation or pushing them into chronic disease or whatever that case is? And so I do think, unfortunately, you know, at least maybe not in Norway, but in the US, toxicity is a huge issue. You know, and I'm sure planet-wide, that's really a thing. But in the US, let's say, like, between, you know, food options, between, you know, what's in our water and what's in, you know, so is drinking water, to your question before, what do we need to be healthy? Okay, we need water. But if that water is toxic, right, it may supply the water that we needed, but now we're also getting this other ingredient that is actually hurting us at the same time. And so, you know, clean water, clean air, clean food, not just sleep like I was unconscious for 7 hours, like good quality sleep and some, you know, deep sleep and REM, right? So, you know, a lot of people might take, let's say a certain medication to sleep. They were asleep, like they were unconscious for 8 hours, but never went through the phases, the deep sleep, the REM, right? All the phases of sleep that they needed. And so the answer to your question is a really big answer. But what I would say is that there's so much that can be done these days. Like, you know, we run toxicity panels on people, like heavy metal, you know, provoked heavy metal urine tests, or, you know, for us, I don't know if you guys have the same like pesticide and glyphosate issues that we do.
We do. You do.
Yeah. I guess in my mind, Norway is just so beautiful. You must not have, but I guess we all do. But we can run glyphosate panels on people. We can run petroleum chemical panels on people, right? Like these are the chemical pests, the plastics, the petroleums, the pesticides, mold, heavy metals. Like these are, from a toxicity standpoint, these are the most common that are creating excessive inflammation, different areas in our body, not allowing our body to, you know, operate properly. Could hyperbaric reduce the inflammation? Yes. But should you need hyperbaric to reduce the inflammation and then stay in the chamber for the rest of your life because you never got rid of the source of the inflammation? That's not going to work either, right? So, you know, obviously, you know that I love this tool. It's an amazing tool. At the same time, if we're not really looking at these other areas, we're never going to create, like, you know, full health. So that's the toxicity side of it. And then on the deficient, well, and then there's also, of course, like, you know, I do believe that we should be eating, you know, animal protein as an example, but not all animal protein was created equally either. So, you know, you could eat a steak, you know, from a cow, and that could have been a very healthy and happy steak from a very healthy and happy cow, or that could be an inflamed, toxic steak from a, you know, from unfortunately an inflamed and toxic cow. And so all of that needs to be considered on the toxicity side. On the deficiency side, we also have great testing to know not only what's in your blood. I think this is an important distinction to make too. I could measure someone's blood and see levels of certain nutrients and vitamins, but we could also measure what got into the cell. And that's a huge distinction to make. In other words, just because it's in your blood doesn't mean the cell took it up. And so something floating in your, even when it comes to IV or, you know, supplements that we're taking, you might be even getting the right ingredients. However, the cells aren't taking them up. And so you'd want to know blood levels of those nutrients, and you'd want to know intracellular levels of those nutrients, because that tells you, like, hey, your blood says your B12 is really high, but your intracellular test says it's very low. So you're taking a lot, but it's not getting in the cell. Well, that's a different conversation, right? So you thought you were doing the right thing, but maybe it was the wrong type of B12, or maybe you have cellular membrane issues, toxicity, that aren't letting you absorb those nutrients, right? And so there's so much that can be done in order to really get good baseline information of, like, how healthy is your plant, you know, and on the deficiency and toxicity side, how could we really start to understand? None of this needs to happen quickly. I believe that this is a journey over time. You know, this is not stuff you can, like, test all in 3 weeks and fix it in 2 weeks. Like, this is years, you know, it's months and years, not days and weeks, to really make the impact that I'm talking about here. But if you're not looking for this actively, and you just assume that because I'm asymptomatic and no one's diagnosed me with anything, therefore, I guess I'm just good, you should assume that you're going to lose your health over time. It's almost guaranteed. If you're not actively engaged in a process of trying to improve your health every day, then you are definitely losing your health as time goes on, you know? And I think that's been the distinction that I'm truly trying to help people make, because I think that people assume that if they're not complaining about anything, they're healthy. And then they get surprised when they get diagnosed with something. And then it becomes a crisis that becomes, you know, something that we have to really work hard to get out of. But if you looked at a continuum, like this is the healthiest somebody can be, this is the sickest somebody can be, or this is death, right? This is perfect optimum health. This is death. Most of us are like kind of somewhere in the middle, you know? And there's a world between I'm asymptomatic and I'm dead, or asymptomatic and really, really sick, right? There's a whole world here. But there's also a whole world here of I have nothing to complain about, but I'm a million miles away from being optimized, you know? And so even though someone's living here, they're either passively losing their health over time until that moment, or they're actively working on improving their health over time. And, you know, that's what I'm really trying to teach people is, in at least on, in this planet at this time, we need a plan, and we need to be working on that regularly to make sure that we're trying to improve things over time.
Great. Thank you. We really like the connection you had with O2 and the colors, red and blue, when you spoke at our Congress. So we have been talking about hyperbar medicine now. Would you add some information about the red light and the methylene blue as well?
Sure. Yeah. So again, back to the plant, you know, if that plant wasn't doing well and all you did was give it sunlight, you know, and so you're like, okay, it probably needs more sun. So you stick it, you know, from a windowsill into like direct sunlight for days on end, and you didn't water it, right? You gave it a good ingredient, but too much of it now, or not mixed with the right other ingredient. One ingredient by itself is never going to restore its health. And so I do believe that when we're looking at how, whether it's optimization or, you know, pushing somebody, you know, away from disease back towards health, it's always going to be this combined effect that we're trying to create. We need synergy between different tools, and we need them to be simultaneous, and we need them to be for a period of time. It's not like one at a time or immediately things get better. We need to create the right environment and then allow the body to actually heal, recover, and then regenerate. And so, you know, one of the things that Brian Richards from, you know, he does a lot of like sauna space, and John LaRance, who's, you know, very, very deep into, you know, a lot of all regenerative medicines as well, but methylene blue, the three of us were talking about, you know, ultimately the synergy between, you know, how does oxygen interact on a cellular level? How is methylene blue interacting on a cellular level? How's red light interacting on a cellular level? And we've, you know, in talking about it from multiple standpoints, that became something that we felt like was very attainable for a lot of people to create some combination of these three things and would have, you know, massive impact. So that's kind of where like the red blue O2 came from. Now, red could be, you know, sauna space in, you know, near infrared and infrared lights. It could be, you know, other, you know, LED versions of light therapy. But by the way, like it all originated from the sun. So it could just be catching, you know, sunrises, catching sunsets, you know, doing some sun gazing at those times, like just, you know, really feeding us, like the sun, you know, we know that the sun literally is a nutrient for plants, and everybody understands that. And for some reason we've eliminated that as a thought for humans, and that's just not right. I mean, the sun is a direct nutrient for our bodies. And so my favorite way to do that would be to get sunlight for sure. And when you can't, then we have these tools that we can use for improved function. Red light works very specifically to improve blood flow, to reduce inflammation, to increase cellular energy. So red light by itself also has amazing impact on inflammation and energy production. I think if you looked at most chronic illness, or the reason that people slide into chronic illness, it's from a slow elevation in inflammation, and it's from a slow decrease in mitochondrial performance, which ultimately leads to, like, you know, basically low cellular energy. So red light has this great impact in both of those worlds. Methylene blue also triggers an amazing amount of mitochondrial function. So it's an energy donator to the mitochondria, allowing us to produce more cellular energy. Methylene blue also helps to reduce inflammation, improve blood flow, and fight infections. So again, there's this overlap between those two. And red light activates that blue color, right? They're actually, if you had white light and you removed red, you'd be left with that blue color. If you had white light and you removed blue, you'd be left with that red color. So they're very complementary in terms of activating one another. And so they work tremendously well together from that standpoint. We know this about food. There's these phytonutrients, like what makes a strawberry that brilliant red color, right? What makes broccoli look like broccoli? And what, like, these, it's not just the nutrients. The colors of these foods have an impact because we have what's called chromophores in our cells. And these are parts of the cell that respond to color. And so, you know, to some extent, red light provides certain effects, but stimulates chromophores that are sensitive to that color. You know, methylene blue has these amazing effects, but in addition, it's this blue color that stimulates very specific chromophores inside the cell. And then, of course, you know, with hyperbaric. So hyperbaric is going to also help reduce chronic inflammation. Hyperbaric is also going to stimulate mitochondrial function for increased energy production. It also helps to improve blood flow. So there's this commonality between the three, and an incredible amount of synergy when you're combining them. So, yeah, I've become a big fan of just even doing that myself. Even B12 as an example, like methylcobalamin, you know, activated B12 is red, a bright red. It's a very, so there's other ingredients in our life that contain these colors that would help stimulate, you know, synergy amongst this whole conversation.
Hva egentlig kollagen? Jo, det et protein vi har mye av i kroppen, og det hjelper oss med å holde oss sterke og smidige, og det en av de viktigste byggeklossene i alt bindevev hos mennesker, dyr, fisk og fugl.
I huden finner vi kollagenet i det midterste laget dermis, der kollagenfiberne gjør huden fast og glatt. Vi tar tilskudd fordi kroppens produksjon av kollagen den går nedover når vi blir eldre.
Vi tar egentlig mindre og mindre kosttilskudd, særlig om sommeren når vi får mye næring av å være utendørs.
Men kollagenpulveret, The Solution, det har vært med oss i hele sommer, ja, helt siden vi startet å ta det tidlig i vår.
Ja, for vi søker naturlige tiltak til god helse, og dette pulveret støtter hudhelsen vår, og vi har sett resultater på fine linjer, elastitet og cellulitter.
Kollagen i vinden som aldri før. På helsekongresser over hele verden snakkes det nå mye om det nyeste innen forskning på kollagen.
Det føles som mat, og pulveret 100% naturlig. Det bare å blande i favorittdrikken din, og la det virke fra innsiden og ut.
Drømmer du om strålende hud med ungdommelig glød, kan du gå inn på osloskinlab.no og bestille. Biohacking 60 gir deg 60% på første kjøp og 30% på de neste.
I wonder what we did back then when we were hunters and gatherers. We just
You'd get the red from sunlight, but you're also getting some red from, let's say, strawberries, and you're getting blue from, you know, broccoli and blueberries, you know, and you're at one point, you know, historically we think that the atmosphere had a higher pressure and and oxygen was more than 21% of our environmental air that we breathe. So I believe that these things also exist naturally, and our environment has been changing, and our participation in our environment has been changing. I mean, people are like, you know, people are afraid of the sun. People hide from the sun. They cover their bodies from the sun. You know, too much of anything is also too much, right? You can't stick the plant in the sun, full spectrum sunlight, and not take care of it. That's going to fry it. Well, that will fry us too. But that doesn't mean we should hide from it and cover up and never expose ourselves. There's a degree of balance. You know, back in the day, I don't know if you guys did this, but I can remember like being a kid and people would have like baby oil and like reflectors and like,
oh yes, I remember
that's
that.
Probably too much sun. I get it. I'm not going to disagree with that. Right. But now we're like lathered up and covered up and like, you know, well, now we've gone too far the other way. We have to start to swing back into the middle somewhere.
It's so funny when I'm every year in Miami, you know, Jason, at this regatta, and all the sailors are covered. They are white. They have white noses, white. But of course, they're out on the sea all day, but they are so white, covered with sunscreen. So there's a balance.
And maybe, right, maybe in that moment, just because of their inability to
control
it. Yeah. Right. That could make sense. Maybe. Yeah. But not necessarily all the other times, you know. And the more you're adapted, just like everything else in life, the more you're adapted to the sunlight and the more you've trained the body how to respond to sunlight, the less of that we need. Right. And so if you're always covered, always covered, always covered, always covered, and then you go on the regatta, you're getting fried.
Of course.
Right. But if you actually taught your body how to adapt to that over years and years and years, then you'd actually be more tolerant to that as well.
Just one more thing before you're going to jump into all your clients and patients you have. When you were here, you talked about stress also and things we can control and things we cannot control. It would be great to hear your thoughts on that since we were talking about control here now. Yes.
Sure. So that's another like background type of project that I give to my patients is to understand that we need stress. Stress is the stimulus for healing and recovery, right? And so our bodies are capable of a tremendous amount of adaptation, but if we're getting too much of certain stressors and then not enough, you know, negative stressors and not enough of good stressors and our health is declining over time and inflammation is building over time, like we're certainly missing a bigger picture of this whole concept. And so heavy metal toxicity is a stressor which will decrease your health over time. Exercise, if implemented properly, is a stressor that will improve your health over time, but it should be viewed as a stressor. Too much of it is not going to help you. Not enough of it is never going to, you know, you'll never get the benefits. And so what we like to do is we like to break stressors into two categories: distress, which are stressors that are bad for you that will break you down over time, and then eustress or EU stress, which are stressors, but stressors that when implemented strategically will improve your health over time, right? So to summarize that, there's good stressors and bad stressors. And then from like a source location, like where are they coming from? There's three sources. There's physical stress. Those are the things that we do to our body. There's chemical stress. That's everything we put into our body, from air to water to food to supplements to drugs to whatever. And then there's emotional stress. And that's all the stuff that we think about. So we could break all our stressors down into physical, chemical, and emotional. And then within each three of those buckets, there's going to be healthy versions of those things and unhealthy versions of those things. Meditation or visualization causes neuroplasticity. It changes something in your brain. It's a stressor, but it's a good one, right? Constantly thinking about all the COVIDs and the bad things in the world and the pesticides and how can I ever live a healthy life in this world? Like that becomes a thought and it could be a negative stressor over time, right? A salad, you have to break it down, digest it, absorb it. That's a stressor, right? Cake, you have to chew it, break it down, absorb it, but your health will not improve if you have a diet full of cake versus, let's say, vegetables as an example, right? So the homework that I usually give people is to look at, say this, make a list of the stressors in your life and then categorize them, you know, create columns, right? Here's your physical stressors and these are the bad ones and the good ones. In other words, I sit all day. That's a physical stress and it's not good for you. Exercise, that's a physical stress and it is good for you. But are you doing the right amount at the right intensity over the right period of time? right? What position do you sleep in? What position, you know, all the things about your body that you're doing, and categorize them in healthy and unhealthy stressors. Chemical stress. Here's all the stuff I do. Well, I take this medication, but I think I have to, but there's probably some consequences to it. But I take this as an example, you know, I take a statin for whatever reason, but I take CoQ10 to try to make up for some of the consequences of that. So, you know, inside of your chemical stressors, here are the healthy stressors and the unhealthy stressors. And then the same thing on the emotional side. You know, these are the unhealthy and the healthy. And then what I tell people to do is then categorize them one more time deeper. These are things I have control over, and these are things I don't have control over. In other words, I have to take this medication. So you feel like I can't change that right now. So that's a chemical stressor that might be negative, but I have no control in this moment. However, my diet is a chemical stressor and I have a lot of control over that. And maybe the diet would actually get me to a place that I may not need that medication anymore. Right? And so, because what I think a lot of people do is they look at their stressors, whatever one is screaming the most, or whichever one they feel kind of pressure from the most. And if it happens to be one that they have no control over, they just feel like helpless. And when we feel helpless, we accomplish nothing. Once we create those lists and we have an idea of what we have control over, what we don't have control over, and then rather than putting our attention on the things that we have no control over, we start to look at, well, of the things I do have control over, how active am I in trying to deal with them? And could I create a plan? And what that does is, number one, it shifts you away from feeling helpless, and it creates a plan that would actually be meaningful for your health. And it forces your brain. You can't think of two things at the same time, right? If you're thinking purple elephant, purple elephant, purple elephant, you can't think yellow lion, right? And if you're thinking yellow lion, you don't see the purple elephant. So you can't see both at the same time. So just by focusing on the things that you actually have control over, the things you don't have control over become minimized in your mind, and you become actively engaged in improving your health over a period of time. Even just that transition of thought would be exceptionally meaningful for most people from a stress standpoint.
Perfect. This is really nice, Jason, but we know you're coming to London in November. Can you tell us about the course you're going to have there?
Yeah, so this is like the sort of gold standard in hyperbaric training. And so it's a 40-hour hyperbaric oxygen therapy certification course. It's accredited by the International Board of Undersea Medicine. It's recommended by the International Hyperbaric Association. But this is the course, whether you're a clinician or a physician of some kind, or a technician, or you're opening a clinic and you're going to be operating a chamber, it's really meant for anyone who is going to be involved in the field of hyperbarics. And it's a way to get certified in this therapy. And like we said earlier, what you'll learn is, you know, those mechanisms of action. What you'll learn is how to talk about hyperbaric and explain what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. You'll learn those, in addition to all the mechanisms of action, you'll also learn the indications and then how to apply this therapy safely, how to apply this therapy effectively, and how to start building protocols that you know are going to be meaningful for the people who you're seeing that you're putting into chambers. So that's really what that course is about. Obviously, the book is part of that course now, this new book. And as you said, it's November 13th to the 16th in London. And I'll send you guys the links.
Perfect.
Audience as well, where that course is.
Oh, we hope so many Norwegians are coming over. Yes. And we can't wait to hear about all your new Norwegian friends, Jason.
Love it. That way I can see them next time I come visit you guys.
Yes, you can do that too. So yeah, we'll make sure that a lot of Norwegians come over to join the course with you. And great. But thank you for your time. And this was great as always.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here with you.
And send lots of love to your family from us.
I will. You guys too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take care.
Det var Jason på linje fra Miami, og jeg gleder meg sånn til å møte han igjen i desember. Det synes ikke du med, Alette, for det veldig hyggelig å være sammen med de.
Det det. Jeg har jo vært så heldig å få møte de i Norge, hele familien. Det disse møtene vi ofte snakker om, som vi
träffa folk genom podcasten vår. Det är för sån vi är heldiga, Monica.
Och i London, vi var ju samman i London också.
Det var vi
också. Så, men till alla där som hör på den här podcasten, klart någon delar är lite yngre och lite mer sån tekniska i förhåll till att förstå hur den hyperbar medicin virker. Men det den snackar om då så det är på en måte en sån ansvarlighet och någon ting att se efter och bland annat så bör all maskin ha någon kallar för CE som är på en måte en slags FDA approvement på maskinen och det är
väl det som heter i EU-landet så är väl det den standarden vi har i Europa
CE ja.
Ja. CE
ja, ikke sant? Så det antar jeg at alle har i Norge selvfølgelig, så det er nok helt trygt å bruke, men også hvis du skal gå og gjøre hyperbar, spør hvor de er sertifisert, hør hvor de er utdannet og hvor lang erfaring de har, og prøv også å bli litt kjent med den protokollen du eventuelt skal ta for den tilstanden du eventuelt har, sånn at du er på en måte selv ansvarlig og sitter i føresettet for hva du skal gå igjennom, for det er både kostbart, og vi vil jo veldig gjerne spre informasjon som gjør at du føler deg trygg når du skal gå i gang med tingene dine.
Trygg, det er viktig at du sier, fordi det var veldig skummelt første gang jeg skulle inn i et sånt kammer. Jeg var veldig glad for at jeg hadde en som holdt meg i hånden og kunne guide meg og gjorde at jeg følte meg trygg, for det er ikke bare å legge seg inn i der første gang. Så det med trygghet og spør alle de spørsmålene man lurer på før man setter i gang med protokollen sin. Helt riktig.
Ja, og min erfaring var jo den første gangen jeg gjorde det, at noen glemte å si at jeg skulle utligne trykket. Så jeg gikk rundt med trykk i ørene i flere måneder, så det var faktisk ikke behagelig. Det var ikke farlig da, men jeg kunne jo bare fått beskjed om det, eller jeg kunne lest det litt bedre selv, for da hadde jeg ikke lest boken til Jason på den tiden der. Det jeg likte veldig godt igjen med Jason, at han jobber så funksjonelt, han jobber så totalt når det gjelder helsen. Han prøver å forstå alle sidene rundt det, og han bruker denne analogien med den planten, og det synes jeg er så fint. For bare tenk deg selv, hvis du har en plante som står i stuen et eller annet sted, og den begynner å visne. Hva gjør du da? Du begynner ikke å liksom gi en genterapi, eller cellegift, eller putte masse statiner ned i jorden. Altså, du begynner ikke å behandle den planten, for du tenker kanskje sunn fornuft. Og så videre, så er det ikke bare en innfallsvinkel til dette, ikke sant?
Nei, det er jo flere, ikke sant? Hvis den planten begynner å bli tørr, så vil du kanskje gi den litt vann. Og så må du tenke på kvaliteten på det vannet, at det er uten gifter og sånne ting, og så tenker du, nei, nå var den litt for våt, nå begynte den å bli litt størselig igjen. Ok, da setter vi den litt ut i solen. Dette helt intuitive som vi har når det gjelder andre levende dyr og særlig planter, er veldig enkelt, fordi alle har vi det rundt oss, som vi ikke tenker på når det gjelder oss selv. Der er vi mye dårligere til å, da tenker vi mer, ja, gi meg en pille, eller finn på et eller annet, så jeg bare blir bra igjen, i stedet for å se på de underliggende grunnene til at vi har blitt dårlige.
Så la oss bare oppsummere litt hva vi tenker vi trenger for å kunne leve et helsemessig godt og sunt liv. Jo, vi trenger jo ren luft.
Vi trenger rent vann.
Og så godt det lar seg gjøre, spise råvarebasert mat og rene kosttilskudd, hvis du først skal ta det.
Og så må vi prøve å forstå hvordan energien flyter gjennom oss, at ikke den har noen stengsler.
Ja, og så dette med søvn. Man kan godt snakke om søvn og slenge det ut, men hvis du besvimer på puten hver eneste kveld og er helt utslitt, så har ikke du den kvalitetssøvn, for du skal både ha dyp søvn, du skal ha remsøvn, du skal ha lett søvn. Så alle de fasene der er viktige for at søvn skal få kvalitet.
Ja. Og så ikke overdrive dette med trening, men selvfølgelig trene, men moderat.
Ja, og så dette med å balansere hormoner, og da vil jeg bare si dette, jeg må dele en liten historie her på slutten, og det at etter vi hadde Karen Martell, så var jeg litt overmodig og begynte å ta utrogestan, progesteronen min, vaginalt i stedet for oralt. Og det betyr at jeg har bare empet den dosen, fordi at når du tar de oralt og svelger de ned, så klarer kroppen tydeligvis å bare ta opp 20-30%. Så jeg har fått for mye progesteron nå, og måtte bare bekke helt ut igjen. Og da er det veldig godt å kjenne seg selv, og faktisk sitte der med de forstørrelsesbrillene på, og ikke bare gjøre det de andre sier. Så jeg måtte nå tilbake igjen, så nå skal jeg gå og ta nye blodanalyser, bare for å se at jeg er i balanse. Så det å balansere hormoner, det er kjempeviktig, men ikke bare gjøre det du blir fortalt, du må selv kjenne etter.
Det er veldig godt poeng. Og så må vi passe på immunsystemet vårt, prøve å holde det så sterkt som mulig gjennom alt det vi allerede har nevnt.
Ja, og så har vi snakket mye om enzymer dette semesteret også, så det å ha sunne råvarer, probiotika eller sauerkraut, få fordøyelsen til å funke bra, det viktig.
Ja, og så til helt til slutt så det den emosjonelle og spirituelle delen vår, den gode følelsen vi får når vi har det godt opp i hodet vårt.
Så med disse bevingende ord ønsker vi dere en herlig uke, og takk for følge nok en gang. Happy
biohack.
Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon med dele kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Julas tilbud og spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribbe fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt I tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.